tonight. Hello, cocktail lovers. Welcome to Paris Cocktail Talk, the show brought to you by the 52 Martinis Guide to Paris Cocktail Bars. I'm Forrest Collins, and I'm here to talk to you about the trends and traditions of drinking in France. So, it's a very cool episode, this episode, because we have a very big personality in the world of cocktails, and actually one of the very first people that I met in France when I embarked on my cocktail journeys. So, I'm really excited to have Nico DeSoto with me today for this episode, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about, well, about himself and his projects. But we're going to talk to him a little bit about the latest menu from his bar, Danico, his Paris bar, Danico. And I think it's really interesting as we've seen the evolution of cocktails over the past, you know, decade and a half, two decades. You see bars going beyond just doing the, you know, really great classics, but getting more creative and paying more attention to all aspects of their program, including the menus. So we're going to kind of take a deeper dive in that with Nico. And for, I'm sure all of my listeners know who Nico is already, but he has been basically on the cocktail scene since, I think, well, I'm going to let him correct me after the intro, but 2005. He did a stint in Australia. Then he came back to Paris and was working at China Club, Mama Shelter, which is where I first met him. And in the nearly 20 years that he's been on the scene, he's become a very really formidable cocktail personality. He's opened Mace in New York, Danico in Paris, and Wacky Wombat most recently in London, which I'm very much looking forward to seeing soon. He has won multiple awards, both personally and for his bars. His name is very familiar in the ranks of the world's 50 best drinks international, Tales of the Cocktail, and Top 500. He consults, he does pop-ups, he travels. And this love of travel is partly what has inspired the latest menu. So we are going to talk about the latest menu at Danico, which is part of the Explorer season, and it's called Japan. And so I'm going to stop telling you about Nico and I'm going to start talking to him. So welcome, Nico. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
Hello, Forrest. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Let's see. First, is there anything I missed in the intro that you think that the listeners should know about you before we crack into the questions?
No. I think it was pretty good. Like it's exactly what basically happened. Yeah. Like, yeah. Maybe miss like I worked for Experimental Cocktail Club, you know, like that was the first guys that opened, you know, like the speakeasy type cocktail bar in Paris. And I worked for them for a little while, opening back to back their venues in London and New York. But I'm helping them as a consultant to open their next venue in New York this year. So that's the news.
Oh, that's very exciting news. So I'll have to get back out to New York soon. Now, you travel a lot. The last count I saw was, I think, 104, but I'm sure it's increased since then. How many countries have you visited so far?
It is 104. Actually, last year, you know, I traveled quite a lot, but not in a new country. But that's going to increase this year because I'm doing Nepal, I'm doing Albania, I'm doing Kenya this year, so at least three new countries to visit. I'm super excited to visit Nepal.
Yeah, I'm really jealous. I imagine that is going to be a pretty amazing place to visit. I mean, I like traveling anywhere, so any place is an amazing place. And you know, you have that real travel spirit, so I'm sure every place is very cool. So, well, let's take. Do you want to talk to the listeners a little bit about the Explorer menu series for Danico? Kind of, what's the inspiration behind that, and what are you doing with it?
Yes. So, since we opened Danico in 2016, we always had menus with flavors from all around the world. But I thought, why not, you know, focus on one country at a time? Because there's so much you can do. There's a lot of countries where doing one menu will be maybe difficult, maybe because the cuisine is not that big, or maybe because the availability of those ingredients will be hard to get in France. But there's a lot of countries which act a fantastic cuisine. And we really decide to focus on one at a time. So it's a series of five. And we started with Indonesia, which is one of my favorite country. I love the food there. Then we did Mexico. And right now we are in Japan. So it's really focused, you know, it's really focused on one country. And we try, I'm sending two members of the team every time to do a guest shift in a country. So at least, you know, they can talk about it. They can feel the country as well, because it's it's nice to have been to the country when you sell drinks. So they go there, they do little guest shift, they try ingredients. You know, the goal is to go to market and to chat with people, know the culture a little bit. And then we work on a menu and together and then, you know, we change that every 6 months, basically.
Yeah, I think that's very cool. And so I didn't know there was going to be 5 in the series. I think that's a nice number. So. And I'm looking forward to trying Japan. I haven't gotten down to try it yet, but can you tell the listeners a little bit about what kind of flavors you're focusing on with the Japan menu?
Well, you know, so Japan has a lot of, I think the in one word, Japan is umami. And the luck with Japan is like, there's a lot of ingredients, but a lot of ingredients you can find in France. Daniko is actually not far from where you have a lot of Japanese shops and markets. So yeah, we focus on, you know, like, I mean, it can be, you know, soy sauce, it can be red bean, it can be sakura, you know, cherry blossom, soy rice. There's so much, you know, basically the flavor you will know when you go to a Japanese restaurant, wagyu beef, but put into drinks, put into cocktails.
I think there's one on your menu. Well, there may be more than one, but there's a particular one that's inspired from food, from cuisine. Can you tell us a little bit about that drink on the menu? It's, I think, inspired by a noodle dish.
Yes. Yeah, so that one is the zaru soba. You know, zaru soba is a cold dish with buckwheat noodles. Soy sauce is just amazing. So we often do a link between a dish and put in a cocktail. Either we take the flavor, the total flavor profile and put it back, or take all the elements, the ingredients, and put it back into one drink. So this one, we did a clarified milk punch, which I think is a really good way to bring any dish into one drink. We did already the gado-gado from Indonesia. We did the moussaka. So we did a few examples already. And this one, so what we do, we incorporate together a wasabi distillate. So we distill vodka with wasabi to really get the strong flavor. A black sesame distillate. We do a buckwheat spice mix. So, you know, inside we put green onions, ginger, some garlic, soy sauce, and put into a dashi. Then cucumber juice, tomato juice, a bit of lemon to get acidity. Togarashi, a spice blend from Japan. And barley shochu, it's really strong in barley, so it goes very well with that drink. And then we clarify everything with soy milk, and we serve it in a really nice ceramic glass with leek sprouts and a Naruto maki.
I think that sounds amazing. I think that there's not enough umami in cocktails. I mean, obviously there's the you know, classics, but like a Bloody Mary or something like that. But I think that it's really nice to explore that as a different way to find a richer and more layered flavor profile in your drinks. So I'm excited to come down and try that one. Can you tell us a little bit about, aside from just sort of these flavors that you expect, is there anything else about Japan that has inspired you and has inspired you to choose it as one of the 5 for this particular menu? Does it go beyond the flavors of the cuisine?
Yeah, it goes beyond because I mean, if you look at the menu, every drink, of course, has Japanese ingredients, but we always have a little story next to it. You know, it can be the sakura, it can be a Helmon Honda, which is a character from Street Fighter. So we try to mix a bit of historical fact or as well, you know, like fun. But Japan, you know, like it's the way of serving as well. You know, like we there's a lot of minimalism, there's a lot of a traditional way, and like the tea ceremony, for example, and we try to incorporate that to the menu the way we can, you know, because you're always limited by budget, place, and speed of service. But we try to bring that together as well. And as well, Japan is just amazing in visual as well, not only in flavors.
Yeah, well, you're really making me excited to get down and try this menu. So, how have, you know, these are not your standard flavors for cocktails. And how have the cocktails been received by a Parisian audience? Are they excited to try something different? Are they a little bit surprised by something that's not the standard cocktails that, you know, they may be used to here? What's the reception like for the French people?
Well, you know, like You have two types. You have the people who've been coming to Danico for a while and they know about what we're doing because we reopened in 2016 and they're excited about new flavors. And you have the people who come for the first time. People who come for the first time, if they're not used to cocktails, or, you know, like that type of cocktail, they might be a bit surprised. So, and then, you know, you have a bit of people are like scared. Oh my God, wasabi and sesame in one drink, give me another drink. So we always try to talk to them and to make them, you know, confident to try the drink, but we can always serve something else anyway, if they don't want to. We don't just do the menu. But I think, you know, when we opened Danico in 2016, and I remember we had like a bacon fat wash. We have some flavors like that, like peas, snap peas, and people are like, oh my God, this is a bit too extreme. It was really the beginning of food incorporated flavors in cocktails. But I think now, you know, like with all the bars, with Little Red Doors, with there's a lot of, you know, classy copper bear, there's a lot of amazing bars in Paris that do that approach as well. And I think the customer are used to it now. Then it's just a matter of getting that trust in the balance, because it's not only to put ingredients in one drink, you need to balance it. You need to taste good. Otherwise, you know, they're not going to come back. They're not going to try a second drink as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what sets the pros apart is this really, this ability to achieve a nice balance, especially when you're incorporating these new and more unusual kind of flavors. So yeah. And I know the staff down at Danico is very capable of handling that kind of thing. Now, I want to talk about something that's not on your current menu, but let's talk about pandan a little bit, because, you know, I'd say, would you agree that you nearly single-handedly brought pandan into the cocktail world as an ingredient that you see now in cocktail menus all over the world? Can you tell me a little bit about that, about your inspirations for using it and how it's now spread?
Yes. So yes, some people call me the Pandasador, and it's a bit of a joke now. Like if people send me always screenshot or tag me on Instagram every time there's a pandan drink. So definitely, I'll say almost in a good way, in a bad way, because like it's a bit too much of a big association sometimes. But I discovered pandan when I was in Indonesia in 2008. I was traveling for 3 months there. And, you know, I love sweets and I love coconut. And on the side of the road, you know, in markets, there's always like those little cakes or like crepes or rice cake, you know, like they were green. There was, and I didn't know what it was, but I just was eating so much of them. And when I worked in London, one bartender from the competition did like a pandan garnish, you know, and I was like, oh, but what is that? And he said, oh, pandan, I live from Southeast Asia. And I tasted it, so like, oh my God, this is the flavor I was looking for this whole time. This is okay. This is pandan. And then, you know, like I never looked back. Like I just love the flavor so much that basically every menu I do, I use it. And pandan is a leaf from Southeast Asia. It's the vanilla of Southeast Asia. They use it for like cakes. They use it for rice. They use it for sweet things, like salty things, savory dishes. But there are 700 varieties of pandan. So some are really good. Some are more like decorative. You'll find them if you go to Taxina. And, you know, like in Indonesia or Vietnam, you know, they use it for the smell and to get rid of the cockroaches as well. It's a really cool plant. And it's quite easy to use, you know, like you can infuse it very easily in spirit. You can make a syrup, boiling the syrup with it. You can blend it to have a little bit more herbal taste. It's easy to use if you can get some. And you know what? The funny fact is like we're about to release a pandan liqueur. I've been working on it for a few years and it's going to be released this year. The bottle is finished. I'm receiving the last batch to try at Danico. And by the end of the month, if I approve, it should be very fast to get out in the market. We called it Kota, which means city in Indonesia. And it's actually part of the name, the first name of the first cocktail I did with pandan, which is Kota Ternate. Sorry, I talked too much about
that. No, you didn't. That was really exciting. And I'm excited to hear that news. I'm excited for you for the liqueur. And it is funny. I'm sure it's kind of a weight to be called, you know, the pandan guy, the pandan bartender, but literally I can't go anywhere in the world and look at a cocktail menu and see a drink with pandan in it without thinking about you. So it's your cross to bear, I guess. But yeah, that's super exciting news about the new product that's coming out. Okay, I won't make you talk about pandan anymore, but I do want to talk about in your other bars in Wacky Wombat and Mace. I haven't been to Mace for quite some time, and I haven't yet been to Wacky Wombat, but do you do the same kind of regional focuses there, or is that something strictly that you do at Danico?
No, so for those, so first of all, you know, like Mace is based on spices. So of course, it's spice-driven, spice-focused. The name of the drink is the name of the spice, the main spice we use. But very often, I actually use the drink from Danico at Mace or at Mace to Danico, you know, like maybe tweaking a little bit the recipe, but because in the end of the day, those three locations, they're very connected in terms of style of drink. You know, that's the style of drink we do and flavors, you know, like. So sometimes if there's a good drink at Mace, I don't see why I wouldn't use it at Danico. But now at Danico, we have, you know, like specifically one country, that's we don't do in the other bars. At Wacky Wombat, it's right now the first menu is focused a little bit on Australia because of the name, because I start bartending in Australia, but that will last only one menu. And Mace is basically, you know, like it can be any type of flavors, any type of, there's no rules. It's just, you know, like we mix them as long as it tastes good and it goes through a profile of that main spice we use.
Okay, very good. Well, I need to get back to New York and I'm excited to get over to London, which I'll be doing in the next few weeks. So I will be checking that out firsthand. Now, do you have any ideas, because you're bringing so many different flavors from regions, do you think there's going to be, what's the next pandan? What's the next flavor that people will be really super excited about that's a little bit unusual and that you'll see spreading throughout cocktails? And maybe you can't answer that, but is there anything that you've seen that kind of has a glimmer of that potential?
I mean, yeah, pandan was a good one, but it's funny because I've been thinking about that. I've been thinking about what could be the next pandan, and to be honest, I haven't found anything. Like there's a bit of excitement with fig leaves, which, you know, like start to come to every menu as well. And I love fig leaves. I'm the first one to use it a lot on most of the menu as well. So I think fig leaf was like one that was a bit hot, but it was already known. You know, there is not like, okay, this is the new ingredient, the new excitement. We have miso that's a bit used everywhere now. So like you see miso to give, you know, a bit of umami flavors on menus. But yeah, no, not something that's come out of nowhere and just makes the way on every menu. You know, You need first for the ingredients to be available. You know, pandan leaves in Miami when I opened Chaido years ago. That's Chaido doesn't exist anymore. One pandan leaf was $1. It's crazy because they didn't have much and they just decided to put the price as big. Now they're planting pandan in Florida, so it's very easy to find. But yeah, availability is one of the big things. So who knows, maybe there's going to be something new soon, but I don't see it right now.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes open to see what's new on the horizon then. I believe that you have brought a cocktail recipe to share with our listeners. Are you ready to share that for us?
Yes. So the cocktail recipe, you know, of course, what we do on the menu at Danico is a bit complicated. We use rhubarb, we use a massive centrifuge that can clarify ingredients. So it wouldn't be very easy to do that at home. But one of the recipes is quite easy to replicate. So it's a twist on a Negroni that we call Sakura because of the cherry blossom. You know, I love that flavor as well. It's not too easy to replicate because the leaves or the flower are very mild. So what we use in that recipe is Hendrix gin, Martini Ribbon of Vermouth, Campari. We add a little bit of umeshu, which is a plum liqueur from Japan, and Sakura. So the thing you have to do, it's to take a zip bag, okay? You take a zip bag, you put 170 mils of Hendrix, 90 mils of Martin Rubino, 80 mils of Umeshu, and 160 mils of Campari. In that, you put 1.5 grams of cinnamon stick and 45 grams of frozen sherry. That you cook sous vide for 2 hours at 52.5 degrees. This is very easy to do if you have an immersion circulation system that you can buy on Amazon. It costs like $150, like Anova is the best brand. But if you don't have that, you don't have to cook it sous vide. Maybe you infuse it for 48 hours and that will do the trick. And after that, you strain and you infuse the rest for 10 minutes with 15 grams of Damanti cherry blossom tea. Then you strain. And to finish, not finished, you blend that. We use a bitter with 250 grams of orange blossom water and 250 grams of almond waters. And that you mix it to add a little dash of that into the drink. And that's it.
Okay, that's it. You make it sound so simple, but that does sound really, it sounds lovely.
I took the one that's the most simple.
I know. When I looked at the menu, I thought maybe people could achieve that at home. I might give it a try, but I'll probably just come to the bar and have somebody serve it to me. But one other question on your menus. Do you know already what the other two regions are that you're going to cover?
Yes. So one is for sure is going to be India. India is on right now. Like the guys already planned the trip. They're going end of March to Bangalore, Mumbai and Delhi, I think, if I'm not wrong. So India, of course, you know, it was obvious. It's just a stronger country in terms of flavors and food culture. So India is on. It's a hard one because I really want to do Peru. And Peru has so much in terms of ingredients, but I'm a bit scared of the availability of the ingredients in France. So I'm going to Peru next month and I'm going to see if it's possible, if some cool ingredients, I will meet someone who will be able to ship it to France. And then we do Peru. And if it's too complicated and the only thing we can do is the chicha morada sour, then we will go to Morocco. It's really hard because, you know, like you have a lot of super cool exotic country in Asia, but I don't want to do only Asia. You know, I could do Vietnam, I could do Thailand as well, but I want to give a bit of the. A bit of love to the rest of the world. So South America has a lot of indigenous culture, you know, like ingredients that grows in mountain, but they're very hard to find in Europe, in France. Europe, for me, it's out of the way because it's, of course, you know, France, Italy, Greece, Spain. I mean, there's so many countries with a very strong food culture. But I want Danico Explorer to be explorer, you know, a bit exotic in a way that we push a little bit further the miles to go to that place.
I like the idea of that. I like the, hopefully you can get the ingredients from Peru and be able to realize that, because I think that that's the exciting part about the Explorer series is this opportunity to taste flavors that you don't get to taste or you don't get to taste very often. So I'm excited. I'll be staying tuned to see what happens with that. With that, we are getting pretty much close to the end of our half hour. Do you want to just tell listeners where the best places to follow you and find you? Is it Instagram? Is it, where can they find you? Just give them your handles and your locations.
I think the best is Instagram. So it's @ Nico de Soto, NICO, number 2, SOTO. And this is the easiest because like I'm traveling all the time, you know, like this year is going to be crazy in terms of like travels again. Like right now I'm in Miami, but then I'm moving to Athens for a few days. There's going to be London and Paris and then Shanghai, China, Chengdu and Hong Kong. And then we go to the South America with like Argentina, Chile, Bolivia, Peru, then we go to Mexico, then back in America. I mean, constantly traveling. Usually what I do is like I have chunks of 2 weeks that where I go to Danico in Paris, then London for Working Woman, then New York for Mace, and a bit of time for the consulting in Miami that I do. But in between that is the travels. As well on Instagram, it's good because most of the drinks we create and when I do pop-ups, that I focus on that, you know, go to local markets and find cool ingredients and put it into drinks. I post as well all the cocktail. I post all the recipes so people can really see as well and get inspiration for that. So I think Instagram is the best way. And as well, you know, like I know some people don't believe me, but I get a lot of questions on Instagram, but I always answer everyone. I always take the time. So when people are like, you know, like they have questions or ideas and they don't hesitate, you know, they can reach me over there and that's very easy.
Well, I think you listeners should take him up on that because, you know, Nico is not just a super talented when it comes to the cocktail world. He's a really nice person. So I can attest to that. So go give him a follow on Instagram if you're not already doing so and keep tabs on what he's doing. And I will put information, links to his Instagram and to all his bars in the show notes. So if you didn't catch that, just look down in the show notes from wherever you're listening to this and you'll be able to find links to where he is. And so with that, I will say thanks so much, Nico, for coming and talking to me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun and I'm looking forward to hear it.
And as am I. And as always, thank you to you listeners for tuning in or downloading. Additional thanks to World Radio Paris for editing and production and to Sun Little for the music that we use. I will put links to all the things that were mentioned up above in the show notes. And as usual, I do remind you to drink responsibly. And until next time, cheers. Shiver by